This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
This came across my desk a little while back. It's a short film called Execution Island. Now, it follows two of the Bali Nine members on their last day. Involves Christy Buckingham, who's out of a church in Melbourne. She joins us right now. Top of the morning to you, Christy.
And the rest of the day to yourself, Duncan. Lovely to chat.
Christy, I was really uncomfortable when I was watching your movie, and it was a good kind of uncomfortable because the start of the movie is you walking in to see Mayuran, and you're giving him a pep talk, but this is the day of his execution. Can you give me some framework why you would walk in to see someone on his death row, on his deathbed, and give him kind of this word of encouragement?
Well, I think the most important thing is, first of all, you've got to understand that these boys I had built a relationship with, and the biggest thing was that they wanted to die according to the values that they had lived by. And towards the end, I'm talking about not when they were originally convicted for their crime. And so to remind him again of the fact that there was something on the other side, and he knew that very much himself. Now, obviously, in the film, there is creative license. I did follow Mayu's lead, and he had said to me specifically he wanted to be singing when he was killed, and he wanted to make sure that he treated everybody with dignity, with compassion, with kindness. And he wanted to be sure that he didn't blame Indonesia in his last words, but rather he called a blessing on Indonesia, because he realized that this was just part of a merciless judicial system, that he became part of the machinery of death, really.
So, I mean, that's kind of a subtext that I think is really critical, is that you've been these guys' spiritual advisor for a long time. You've obviously seen change in their life. You know, one of Mayu's quotes is, if you don't accept people can change, then no one has an incentive to change. Is that you've got this entire subtext within the movie that these guys are actually changed and reformed human beings, yet there's no framework within the system for releasing them.
No. Well, first of all, I'd like to say, Duncan, that I was a small part of a bigger picture of many people over many years, actually bringing them over to the light side. And I ended up at the pointy end of that, but other people had gone before. So when I met them in 2012, they were largely reformed at that point. So the ironic thing is that Indonesia is actually one of the better places for rehabilitation and reformation. Their own system allowed them to become reformed, and their own law said that if they become reformed, then the execution could be commuted to life imprisonment. And you know, you hear people say, you've done the crime, you pay the time. Yeah, we agree with paying the time, but we don't agree that anyone can take the life of another person, especially from a Christian perspective. If you are a New Testament Christian, which you can't be anything else if you are living today, then either Jesus died for the sin of the world, period, first, past, present, and future, or he didn't. Was his sacrifice enough, or was it not? Do we need to do more? Do we need to then, you know, demand blood, which is going back to law instead of grace? And we need to interrogate our thinking of that, and also to ask ourselves the question, is any human being able to take the life of another human being, ever?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you've got, right, is you've got a judicial system that enforces capital punishment. But I really had a sense as I was kind of watching this short film unfold that there was a sense of like a modern martyrism going on here. Like, all I could think about was that quote by Tertullian that says that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And there's this kind of really powerful example of two, certainly for Mayu, this Christian man who is willing to meet his maker today and do it honorably, gracefully, and humbly.
Yeah, and certainly he did that, and I witnessed that, and it was extraordinary, probably one of my most confronting experiences in my faith journey. Like, I wonder if I would be that prepared, if I wouldn't fight back, if I wouldn't say a snide remark or something, you know. But certainly, I mean, Mayu would hate the thought of anyone thinking of him as a martyr, because generally you think of martyrs as pure and holy people. And he realized very much, in fact, when they tied into that cross thing that they tied him to, he said, oh my goodness, he said, you know, I'm embarrassed. He said, it sort of looks a bit like Jesus, but he said, I'm certainly not Jesus, you know. He had no, you know, no ideals of being a martyr. However, he did disagree, obviously, with people killing him for a mistake he made as a young, vulnerable man. And they don't get into this position, you know, any other way. And so certainly he did want his life to count against the death penalty. And in fact, he made me make a vow that I would speak in whatever situations I could. And that's where this film came out, because to be honest with you, I'd been involved in another film and it was pretty, pretty difficult to be a part of. I represented myself in that one. And when Julian approached me, Julian York approached me and said, look, we want to do this film. I said, well, how does it differ? And then he told me about the opportunity to share the faith aspect of it. And I thought, well, certainly that needs to be shared, because I don't know how the boys could have faced it any other way and faced it so well.
Certainly here in Australia, there'd be very, very, very few people that had bared witness to a capital punishment. And I could not imagine what that feels like to sit in a space where you're watching that transpire. Not only that, I think probably as a Christian, there's a certain amount of injustice that wells up within our soul going, this is not right. How do you walk away from an experience like that? Like, how has your faith changed as a result of being present for something like that?
Well, I think that whilst it was a terrible situation, that it is actually, you know, I have seen the love of God and experienced his presence in a way that I've never done before or may never again this side of eternity. You know, I witnessed braveness in the face of barbaric behavior and holiness in a place of hate and gentleness and meekness in an environment of force and confusion. And I saw the power of good and the power of God face head on the forces of evil. And I witnessed this dynamic, and I can only describe it as seeing God's amazing grace. And I can only say that whilst it crushed me to a place that I never thought was even possible, out of that has come, you know, a thing of beauty. And it never should have happened. I don't believe that it should have happened, but it did. And it reminds me again of the fact that God, in his providence, his will, you know, he has a bigger picture in mind all the time. And these boys, you know, when you go and do something and you sanctify it or you hand it over to God, you say, God, I want my life and my death to count for something bigger than me, then it becomes holy. Then it becomes powerful. Then it becomes unstoppable. And I've seen this force now in the conversations of others. I've seen this force happen in the fact that, you know, I used to say, if you had to talk to me this time last year, I would have been saying that 8 of our neighbouring countries still have the death penalty. Now there are 7, because Malaysia has opted for a moratorium, in hopefully with a view to abolition. And so people say to me, why are you even bothered about this, Christy? You know, continuing on, is this not painful? Well, I'm bothered about it because I think it's a violation of God's plan for people. And I'm bothered about it because I also think that unless Australians are very outspoken about it, and especially Christians, there is no place for execution in the New Testament. There is no place for it at all. Then if we don't sing the same song, or at least sing in harmony as Christians, you know, what is our voice? What are we actually doing? What are we actually saying? Are we saying that people are beyond redemption? Are we saying that there is something that is so terrible, that is so awful, that God cannot forgive? You know, and I think it's important to think about these things. And things did not work out the way we hoped or prayed for, but they've worked out differently, and the boys' lives have not been in vain because of that.
It's almost 4 years on since the event, and I mean, there's this powerful moment where obviously Mayu has entrusted you with this message. That's a fairly significant burden that you're kind of entrusted to carry.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I was speaking to one of the people that has been amazing help to me, and she was at an execution of a very close friend, and she said that she actually opted to not speak out against the death penalty, but to help in other ways. So her help to me has been, fantastic. But I did, Mayu chose me specifically because he knew. He said to me, I know you will do this. I know that you will continue to speak out against the death penalty. And he made me make a vow. He was hilarious because he said to me in the January before, he said, how long have you been married, Mrs. B? And at that time, it was about 23 years and 22 years at the time. And he said, and how long have you been a pastor? And I said, about 25. And he said, he said, if you give me another 20 years of speaking against the death penalty, that'd be great. And he said, would you vow to do that? And I thought it was such a funny word for him to use as a young man in prison. And I said, well, I'll have to think about that. I said, I've only just made two other vows, you know? And then in March, when I visited him again in February and then again in March, and I visited him in March, he said, have you thought about that? And I said, what? He said, about would you vow to speak out against the death penalty? And I said, yes, I have. And he said, and what's your answer? And I said, yes, I would. And so on the night, he said to me, first of all, I'm sorry to put you through this, but he said, I'm also so grateful that you have agreed to speak out against the death penalty. And so to me, it has helped me. It's been cathartic in the perspective of, with this perspective of being able to actually put some purpose into the absolute waste and just stupidity of a system that will not listen to evidence that the death penalty is not a deterrent, let alone to think about the conscience side of it.
There is an attitude sometimes when someone hears that, you know, lots of strong language, but they go, you know what, Mayu broke the law in another country where they have different policies, and we all know that Jesus forgives sins, but there's consequences for his actions, and this is the consequence for his action that he then has to walk. Why are we railing against another country, another culture, when this is what they do? What would you say to that person?
I'd say very simply, this argument is bigger than cultures, and this argument is bigger than countries. This argument is based in scripture, and there should be no, this should never be the punishment that it shouldn't exist. So we shouldn't even be having this conversation. We should be saying, yes, he should be rehabilitated, and yes, if you used him as a weapon in the war against drugs, alive, moving him around the prisons in Indonesia, or having him, you know, having kids. I took a group of kids in there, 15 kids, who will never use drugs in their lives again.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a much better use of the redemptive story. And what I'm saying is that this should not be a mode of punishment. In the same way as using that argument, you would say, oh, well, in these countries, they circumcise girls, or in these countries, they give child brides. Well, and so if they're out in that country, that's their culture, that's okay. Yeah. No, that's not okay, you know? So I think we have to actually look at our arguments and work out where are they coming from? What is the deep root? What is the fear? It comes down to a fear. And the problem is a systemic problem because, you know, these guys, these kingpins, these masterminds behind these, and Mayu and Andrew were not either of those. They were in the lowest level of drug mule. They're not looking for people who come from, you know, they're looking for vulnerable people. And so both guys have dropped out of school. They joined gangs. You know, how can our government look at helping with leadership for kids, you know, 12 and up, so that they don't get involved in these things? What are we doing at a level of prevention? And I think people have a lot of opinions, but they don't know the facts. And I think it's important that we look at the facts. I think it's important that we look at the evidence. And I think it's important that we decide what can we do to stop this ever happening again. And one of those things would be to have abolition right around the world.
Yeah. Well, Christy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Of course, Heritage Films will be releasing Execution Island from the 28th of April for churches to screen in their local communities. And then it will also come with a study guide available for small group engagements, as well as being on iTunes at a later date. Christy, thank you for sharing what has been a powerful and challenging story.
You're very welcome, Duncan. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.